Hey everyone, this is James Mackey and welcome to the Breakthrough Hiring Show. Join us as we cover high-level thought leadership and step-by-step guides on how to make people a competitive advantage for your organization. I'm incredibly proud to be the CEO of Secure Vision, the sponsor of this show and the number one contract recruiting, embedded recruiting, and RPO firm. A thank you to our partners, Greenhouse, the hiring operating system for people-first companies, and GEM, the all-in-one hiring solution recruiters love. Let's go! Hello and welcome to Talent Acquisition Trends and Strategy. Today we are joined by James Hornick. James, welcome to the show.
Hey, thanks for having me. Happy to be here.
Well, we're really pumped to have you here. I'm really excited to speak with you and kind of pick your brain on what's happening right now in the world of talent acquisition. So I know we're going to have a ton of fun and hopefully learn from each other. But before we jump into it, just for everybody tuning in, do you mind just sharing a little bit about what you do? I want everyone to know what perspective you're coming from.
Yeah, sure. So one of the partners at Hirewell, I'm also the chief revenue officer. So I've been here since 2005, which seems like yesterday. Realize it's been a long time. We've grown a lot since then. So I did about, when I first joined, this is the sales pitch that I tell people a million times every day. We were like a four-person shop. Now we're just over 200. So we've grown like a lot in that time span. I was a tech recruiter for 10 years. So did all that. My kind of next thing I did here was I actually built out, along with my colleague, Don Maragos, our marketing recruiting division. So I know a lot about that competency as well. Kind of in doing that, I'm sure you've seen as you're hosting a podcast now. There was a point in time where like, I'm talking to all these like old school stodgy businesses that are doing digital marketing for the first time. And I'm like, why the hell aren't we doing this? You know, and because no one in our industry does this, or shouldn't say no one, there's maybe five of us. Right. So that really kind of, cause I took on more of a business development capacity when I was building that division out. And I realized like, wouldn't this be easier if we just like communicate with people like the way they're used to, like, you know, through content and stuff like that. So, that's been a huge game changer for us. Not just like, cause I really, the focus now, like my personal focus is it's business development, strategy, marketing. A lot of that is training up others in the organization to do content marketing or to do sales or like that aspect of the business. So I'm not a big fan of, I like keeping the individual sales force small within recruiting. But those people should also be very skilled, know the background, sat in the seat, be more strategic and consultative focus. But I think it's important that everyone on your team not be focused in always selling, but at least have that in their DNA a little bit to just know when they see opportunities in front of them and know how to like better service their clients, which is ultimately what it comes down to. So, it's just, I'm the sales guy, I'm the marketing guy, but I try to help others in the organization like take on that mindset. So.
Yeah, for sure. So maybe we just actually start there. I think it's very interesting that on the recruiting agency side, and as a broad statement, obviously there's a ton of delivery models and we could get like more into that, but like just say high level recruiting agencies, right? Regardless of how they're delivering the solution, it's just such an old school, antiquated strategy. I just don't like hardly any, I think it would be accurate to say like literally probably less than 1% of agencies are really optimizing several revenue channels and are being forward thinking about their revenue strategy.
Yeah.
And I know that you're doing it, we're doing it, right, at Secure Vision. So like we're both Hirewell and Secure Vision are doing that. But in terms of tackling several channels, like Hirewell is the only company that I've seen come up in more than one channel that we're also targeting. There's a couple other companies where like, okay, I might see they're investing in high intent on G2, or, you know, one company might be investing in content, but like you guys are showing up in several areas, which it's odd, right? Like, it's just kind of interesting how basic and unsophisticated a lot of agency revenue strategies are. What do you think like got you on the right path? Like for me, it was working with a ton of tech companies. Right. Mm-hmm. Because I would see the like how robust and, you know, how tech forward and process oriented their revenue strategies were. And so just being kind of surrounded by the ecosystem enabled us to learn more about different strategies than maybe what I learned from the early days working at K-Force. Right. So what was it for you? Like, how did you kind of get on the right path with the revenue strategy?
So when you say revenue strategy, in terms of like marketing channels, but also in terms of like business lines. Cause I think it's part and parcel to it is that's what got my brain kind of thinking differently about it is when we started, you know, when I first got into this business, like every recruiting firm did one thing, and that's still most recruiting firms. Like they're just a tech recruiting firm. You're a marketing recruiting firm. You're a creative recruiting firm. But we realized years ago that we wanted to be something. We want to solve the whole problem, create a full solution. And to do that, you need a lot of different experts, you know, because it doesn't work having like a recruiting firm that'll just take on any rec and everyone does everything. Like you do have to have some level of specialization, but you can build things out in a way where you do have, like we have a whole team focused on tech recruiting, team focused on HR recruiting, marketing recruiting, sales recruiting, finance and accounting recruiting. But when you have all those things together, you can go into companies and actually solve like the whole problem they have, not just, hey, I can work on these recs, but can't help you here. You can actually make something more comprehensive. Then we also, side note, you know, kind of got into more of the on-demand model. So we do have that more. So we have the traditional model where we're able to kind of help people with individual recs. Then we also have the model where it's more of a flat rate, because as you know, some companies will never pay on a rec by rec kind of individual fee basis. Anyways, sure. point of the story being, I think realizing how having different services and being able to attack the problem and create bigger solutions, getting good at one thing, then moving on to the next thing, then moving on to the next thing is kind of how we went about it, right? You have to get great at one thing before you move on to the next. It's the same thing, I think, with marketing and it's kind of sales strategies. Like there are certain things, you do need to focus on one or two things and get good at them and get competent. But once you have that down, move on to the next and stay on top of like what other people are doing. So if I had to go back, I have to like our first strategy on marketing, like it was kind of a flop, like redo the website, hire a content strategist, write a bunch of blogs, you know, and it's just like, and the funny thing was, is that I got asked to speak at a American Marketing Association conference for job seekers, and they're like, hey, can you help us promote this? You know, I'm like, yeah, sure, whatever. And this is like right when LinkedIn launched video. And so I just like pick up my phone, shoot a selfie, post it, first video ever posted. And it got like 10,000 views compared to like the 100 views, like some stupid blog post got. And that makes you just like mind blown, like we're doing this all wrong, you know? So then it's just watching, looking at other, and I guess you kind of said it yourself, like from other tech firms, looking at what other industries that are more progressive are doing from a marketing standpoint, from a sales standpoint, and realizing if you can just follow the leader in more advanced areas, but do it in a frankly suckier industry like ours, like you're cutting edge.
Right. Exactly. It's like, I'm sure people are looking at like what I'm doing or what you're doing, like, how did they think of that? But it's really it's just about like the ecosystem that you're surrounded. Like a lot, I'm in the DC area. So a lot of the companies around here are like GovCon, right? Which is kind of funny because I don't work with any GovCons. Like all my clients are like New York, San Francisco. I guess some are remote now. Some are like internationally headquartered, but we're helping them scale US teams. So it's, I'm affiliated within the tech industry, but I'm in DC, which is like even more old school. Yeah. Antiquated, and like none of the recruiting agencies, I mean, even like the branding, man, like I'm not saying like branding is everything, but man, like most agencies, like the branding, the logos, the websites, like super text heavy. They look like websites could have been made in the 90s. Right.
I think that's just an extension of corporate speak. Like that's not exclusive to recruiting. That's like, right. I guess what you're saying, that's every company. Like, why is everyone obsessed with like the safe bet, sounding like everyone else, the approved marketing message, but everyone makes fun of that shit, you know, when they're online. Like, look at this crappy message I got. Look at this crappy like website and this crappy logo, you know. And we were having, because we've added some tech components. We acquired a couple of tech companies, and we were like, okay, we're doing a lot of things now. We can sell some technology, you know, these other things. Like, how are we going to talk about it? And internally, we're talking about we created an ecosystem. Right. Mm-hmm. Then I'm like, how old is that term? Like, what are we trying to say here? Like, can't we just say we do a bunch of shit? Like, isn't that what people want to hear? And like, I guess we can say that. It's our company. We know whatever we want. So,
yeah, exactly. Yeah, no, it makes a lot of sense. I mean, that's it's definitely for us. Like, we actually started. I mean, I'll be honest. Like, the first few years that I started the company, I didn't value like branding at all. Like I came from that old school kind of corporate mindset of it's the quality of my work that matters. Like mm-hmm. nothing else matters, which of course quality is, yes, that's yeah. probably the most important thing, but
that's baseline, you know?
Right. Like, yeah. yeah. Like you have to have, but like what was wild is when we updated like all of our branding and, you know, all the stuff online and everything and how we were showing up, the quality of our clients skyrocketed, the quality of the people we could attract to work here skyrocketed. It gave us a massive lift. Mm-hmm. Which honestly surprised me and had me thinking like, damn, I should have invested in this a lot sooner. And really, yeah. really glad I did. But it makes a difference. And I think, you know, the agencies that are going to thrive tomorrow, they're going to have some combination of tech enablement. They're going to have some, you know, they're going to be like forward thinking in terms of revenue strategies. And as you mentioned, part of a component of that is delivery strategy, revenue models in terms of how they're paid. But the other aspect is, you know, mastering several channels. Like I think too, just to get into kind of where we are in the current market, like I try to stay on top of like who's doing well, who's suffering, you know, who's going through cuts like in our space, right? Yeah. And I think the companies that seem to be thriving or at least doing the best right now are the ones that have multiple channels that are producing revenue. Mm-hmm. Like relationship-based sales is incredibly important. But if you only have one channel or there's just one person pulling in revenue or, you know, anything's where it's like that bottleneck or it's like too highly leveraged on one mm-hmm. Source, that's really dangerous. And I think a lot of those companies right now, they're getting hurt badly.
I mean, that's what we learned from the 2008-2009 debacle, because we were doing this back then, and we were in a spot there where we were still very largely in tech. I think we were just getting an HR at that point, but we luckily tech was it held up. You know, it wasn't a great year for us, but like we were fine. But we saw there's the firms that were positioned maybe more in certain areas like. In the contract space were killing it, and others like creative recruiting firms just got crushed. Like, and we realized that it had to do with the clients we had. Like we had a few consulting clients that killed it because everyone cut their staff and hired consulting companies. So we were like supplying these companies to people, but just diversifying your client base, diversifying the types of roles you fill, diversifying all these different is how you stay recession proof. You know, that doesn't mean you can't be affected by a downturn, but the amount of my advice, whether it's a recruiting, someone getting into recruiting or whether it's someone in any industry, it's like you can't be tied to one industry, one type of sector. I mean, it's business 101, but I think when mm-hmm. people are starting out, and they're like, I think people are overly obsessed with like, I have to like master this niche. You know what I mean? Like what the riches are in the niches, like until that niche blows up and you're out of, you know, you got no, but nothing. So I think it's having it, and it takes scale. You need more people to do it, but I think it also allows that too. Like we wouldn't be 200 people if we didn't have all these divisions, you know what I mean? So you can only hire so many tech recruiters, you know, but if you can service a company multiple areas, you can have more staff and make more revenue from one client. Again, business 101. I just don't think people in recruiting think this way though. So
no, they don't. I mean, I always came from environments where it was like, we're going to fill like, you know, one type of position or one function, right? Like salespeople or whatever for several companies. And mm-hmm. yeah, you're right. I kind of, I a couple of years ago shifted over to the model we are in now, which is like, we want to be the go-to across the board for, you know, every position besides executive. Like we don't really mess with executive search. Like that's not really what we do for us yet. Maybe one day in the future, we'll add that, but pretty much, I mean, like we'll do like regional VPs, but primarily director level to entry level is like what we focus on. And you know, we just kind of made that shift, and it's first of all, it's great from an account management perspective because you have fewer accounts. Like obviously you still need a lot of, you know, clients to be stable and to be healthy, but mm-hmm. you know, we can get deeper within accounts. We can kind of get stickier within accounts where it's like, okay, yeah. engineering recruiting is slowing down, but sales is picking up. Right.
Yeah.
And so it's easier to have less, you know, churn essentially within your client base as well.
Yeah. I mean, stickiness is everything. That was like in our early days when we only did tech, like we would have clients where we totally knocked out of the park. They need to hire yeah. 30 people. We filled them all. And then they didn't need to hire anymore. And then 2 years went by and everyone we knew left or the management changed. And, you know, like the thought was in those early, early days, like, ah, it's just what happens. Like, you know, eventually clients outgrow you but then you realize, wait, but they were hiring all the other areas. You know what I mean? So right. like, that also kind of drove it. Yeah.
Yeah.
So.
I think it's like, it's better. It's important to really know the environment of the customer, right? Like mm-hmm. you really have to know, for instance, if it's like tech industry or a services firm, like What are the challenges? What are the opportunities in front of them? How are they thinking about scaling their team holistically? Like, you have to understand that stuff, and that that can be your expertise. Your expertise doesn't have to be like, I only fill engineering roles. Like, you can hire the specialists that know how to hire for these different roles, which I have my own thoughts on, like, the need for specialists. Some of our clients really want the specialists, so we provide that. But honestly, I feel like a great recruiter is going to do a great job for most openings. But yeah, I think it's just more important to, you just have to be the expert for that type of environment. And I think it's less important to focus on one or two specific roles and more so just be the go-to partner across the board for companies that are similar in some regard.
Yeah. Specialty wise, I mean, yes and no. I 100% agree that like a great recruiter can figure out, and that's part and parcel of being a great recruiter, is like being able to take a search, understand the functional nature, the problems they solve, where they came from. I do think there's some areas are easier than others though, like building our marketing and sales teams. Like, we're all like former like people who recruited tech or other areas like that typically got those things going. Finance and accounting is a different game. You know, like if everyone are finance and accountant, they're all former accountants. You know what I mean? Like, when your CFOs talk to people, like, they, you need to know your shit. Like, you can't fake that. You know what I mean? Either you came from that world or you didn't. Mm-hmm. But even then, still, like, there's certain people on our marketing team that they've just been doing it for so long at this point that they can talk circles around generalist recruiters when it comes to the specificity of certain things within the field. That, I mean, I started that practice years ago. And when I have some of these guys on sales calls talking to clients, like, even I don't know what they're talking about anymore. You know what I mean? So it's like there's a level of to getting, but to your point, like, I think that's for really specialized searches. And there are companies, we have lots of clients who need specialized searches, but not every position that companies need to hire for that complex.
Question on that. So, like, but how much of that do you, okay, because sometimes I feel like clients over index or overvalue like somebody being like a detailed expert on like every little facet of their what they do, right? Mm-hmm. Whereas to me, it's like, does somebody really need to understand everything at such a deep level to do recruiting? And my thoughts are no. I mean, yes, there are specialty searches, and I think particularly when you get into leadership level roles or very senior level roles, it's going to be more important. But I think like a strong recruiter that just understands the core, like vetting core, you know, matching up skill sets, matching up background experiences coming from similar environments, particularly for sales, like past performance, these types of things, being able to dig into quotas and that kind of stuff. You know, I feel like that's ultimately more important. Sometimes hiring managers are like looking a little bit too much for like their understanding at very kind of nuanced, very, you know, things that typically only salespeople would know, for instance. Like, I just don't know how important that really is. It's more of just like, it helps win the business, I feel like, for us.
Yeah, you just nailed it. That was what I was going to say. I mean? It helps win the business, because when you're talking to that person versus a generalist, when you're, I shouldn't rephrase that, when you're a hiring manager, you're a CMO or you're a CTO or whatever, and you can talk to someone that can speak in your own language or pretty damn close to it versus a generalist, like, you always go with that person.
For sure.
So, but the thing is though, like, I also, that being said though, as I said before, like use our marketing practice, like, right, everyone we had in that practice, they came from technology recruiting. Like, they learned this and they're experts now and can talk at that granular level because they've been doing it for so long, not because they just, you know, not because they just nerded out and they're not former marketers who had got into this, you know? So it's just time in them. It's just, I think really it's what we're talking about is just senior staff knows how to talk at a, like, when you've been doing this longer and you've been focusing in the same niche longer, like, you're going to be able to outperform more junior people, which is an obvious no shit statement, but that's why it just also pays to build your organization to have lots of, you know, senior leaders and people who are, take this seriously as a career, because I think you need a mix. Like, you definitely need to be training your own talent, but you also need to make sure you're able to kind of attract and retain senior people as well too. So,
oh yeah, 100%. That's very true. Very true. Yeah. And a lot of that comes down to, is like, one of the issues with traditional agency recruiting or old school agency recruiting is just not putting together compelling employment opportunities and compensation packages. Mm-hmm. I feel like there's a kind of like this old school mentality a lot of search firms put in a place where it's like, oh, people have to be, it's like really low base salaries, terrible work-life balance,
We all started at a place like that, right?
Yeah, we all did. We all, right? Like, and so it's just one of those things where it's like you have to, I think, to be successful in 2022 beyond, it's like you have to think for yourself. You have to really think, like, is this logical, the way that this industry has been doing things for the past 50 years? Is that really what we should be doing? Everything from, you know, revenue models in terms of how we deliver, in terms of how we sell, and then also how are we attracting and retaining talent? Like, everything that I'm assuming Hirewell is doing, that I'm doing, is drastically different than the environments that we came up in, right? Before working where we do now.
I mean, that's, we've always been that way. That's how myself, or others like Matt Masucci, who's our CEO, Mark Slocum, who's our head of our tech group, we've been working together for like 17 years now. That was why, because we didn't want to work with these other companies. We've all been there before and it's terrible. But I've said this before, and this goes for like any organization, like having the best people and being able to retain them is what's going to make you a successful business. And do that by becoming a destination firm, is what I call it. So having a culture people want to work for is really it. You know, we went full remote just because it was obvious to me that, like, it's, you can attract better talent and retain better talent that way. Paying better, you know, like, which seems that. It's just, I mean, it's the opposite of what you the old place we started. They pay crap and they treat you terrible. If you just pay people better and treat them well, it's just, you're already a step up, you know. Like, it's not, again, it's not business 101 this time. Like, this seems, this is a more advanced concept people have a hard time wrapping their head around, that if you like treat people really well and build a kick-ass place and pay them better than like above average.
I feel like somebody could get more value from listening to what you just said than getting like an MBA. Like, honestly, if you just, you have to know how to align incentives. And
I don't charge enough for these podcast appearances.
I know, right? This is just, it seems basic, but I think particularly when you get kind of indoctrinated into a certain way of doing business, like you're coming up and you start working somewhere and like, this is just how it's been done. Mm-hmm. It's hard for some people to break through that and realize like, wait, what if all of this is just, I could do it a completely different way and get, you know, produce drastically better results. I mean, when I started the company, we actually started out in kind of like more of a traditional compensation plan because that's what I knew, right? That's how I came up. And, I started Secure Vision when I was pretty young. So it's, you know, I had a few years of experience and I just kind of like was figuring it out. Right. But I happened to speak with a business owner who owns a firm out of Palm Beach, and you know, he was willing to do a few kind of mentorship calls with me a few years ago, and he was just like, he just really just drove it home just how important like changing the compensation model is, offering high base salaries, just saying like, you know, you're going to be able to attract much better talent, that talent is going to be able to produce much better outcomes, quality outcomes for your customers, and that's what's going to give you the foundation you need to ultimately grow your business. And so we started to kind of revamp the whole model, really starting in 2020. And it was just like instantly noticeable.
Yeah.
In terms of the, you know, we kind of moved even a little bit away from like a performance culture and really just like hiring senior people and letting them decide how to achieve results. I mean, we're refining that a little bit and trying to get better there, but it's really more so about just getting the best fit people. And less about obsessing on metrics. I mean, metrics are important. I get it. But it's like the most important thing is getting the best people on your team, because that's going to be the biggest lift in terms of the results we can drive for customers, right?
Yeah. It's funny you mentioned metrics, and this will be a quick tangent, I promise you, but it reminded me of something. Because, well, first off, who actually likes who likes tracking that stuff? Like, I never understood the micromanaged environments, because like, who enjoys managing people that closely anyway? Like, you have to be psychotic to actually enjoy. But anyways, I digress. Yeah. But how the metrics can lie, like one example, the person who our top biller, one of our partners who was like top biller last year, she's always like in the top. I know she had one of the lowest submission numbers.
Yep.
It's because you don't need as many when you're good.
Yeah, when you know what you're doing.
When it only takes you two submissions to make a placement, you don't need to have 5 or 10 or whatever it is per week. You know what I mean? So
you know, we try to sometimes we'll recruit from other RPOs, typically the ones that don't pay well, that are very old school in terms of their business philosophy and how they go about business. So like there was one RPO, like without naming names, that apparently with a lot of their enterprise customers, had like submittal goals per week, and that was what they had to deliver to the customer.
Yeah.
And it just, I don't know if like they decided to do that or if the enterprise customer like requested that.
But I learned that real quick. Yeah.
Which one, I mean, who do you think drove that? Do you think, I can't see why an RPO would like to, unless it's kind of easy to manage because you're just counting submittals. I mean, or do you think the client drove it?
Yeah. Our very first, I didn't mention this in my lead up, but I managed our very first like larger scale managed RPO engagement. We were first testing it out. This is like 10 years ago, right? I had no idea what I was doing. It worked out great. They're one of our best clients of all time, but that's awesome. That is what we ran into is that like, you know, they wanted a certain amount of submissions. Like it just seems reasonable. You know what I mean? Like if we're going to pay you money, we must see these submissions, you know what I mean? And, you know, you get a little fast and loose with who you send over when it's, you know, the end of the month or week when you're not near that number. Then we had a discussion about, then they realized, okay, these, you're right. These are hard as shit roles. Like we just need good people, like send us, you know what I mean? So it really is about the fill and you, especially when you've got, you know, different types of positions. You know, some things are higher volume than others, you know, but anytime you incent based upon number of metrics that closely, you're opening yourself up to gamifying things and using gamifying in a bad way. Like people are going to start playing numbers games, which is common in sales. Like every sales manager is aware of this, you know, but I think in recruiting for some reason, maybe they're aware, but I think the reason why recruiting firms do this and no one cares is because these are the firms that do this are the ones that are working contingent. Mm-hmm. They're paying everyone no money. They don't really care if anyone's successful or not, because they're just going to find some other person right out of school. They're going to train and yell at, you know, and they run it by make so many submissions per week. And, you know, half of you aren't going to last here anyway. So I think it is part and parcel, and you're talking like in RPO terms, but I think it's still the same concept where when you don't really care about your employees, you're not really going to care about if throwing stupid numbers at them. And that's how firms like you and mine have done well, because we've taken the opposite approach in terms of look what's going to be a good result for the customer and how do we get there?
Right.
It's deconstructing all these classical systems.
Yeah. Like theoretically, I kind of like the idea of being really highly metrics driven. Like when I look at revenue orgs, right? And I look at, you know, the best revenue advisors, like particularly on the sales side, will say like track everything, you know, and like really try to analyze everything and set clear goals for everything. But yeah, I think maybe like submittal goals could work for separate sourcing teams. Right. Mm-hmm. Where there's like the check and balance of sourcing partner to recruiter and the recruiter's acting as that gate. But I wouldn't task like the recruiter with if there is some type of submittal goal, it would have to be incredibly situational. And you don't want it to be too high because then it just drives poor quality.
Yeah.
So maybe it would work for have you done it for sourcing partners before?
Yeah, for sourcing. There? Yeah, we have for sourcing. I was going to say, not to derail this, like, we do track it internally, but we track it as a nice to know that's secondary to results. You know what I mean? So people who are working engagements that are getting done well, we don't really care what their submission numbers are because they're getting the result we want. It's more to track people that might be struggling, might be learning, might be having a hiccup with a project. Then we look at those numbers to see, okay, is there anything out of line here? More of a teaching tool kind of thing, as opposed to like hit these numbers, you know what I mean?
For sure. It's like a retroactive, like if somebody's struggling, then you can deconstruct like, okay, what's happening? What is producing this outcome? What do we have to change to get a different outcome type of conversation? Yeah.
Correct. Sourcing's different. Like we do like in our on-demand group, which is, like I said, that's the, you know, RPO, you know, kind of version of what we do. So we do both full desk and we do sourcing depending on what clients want. There's different deliverables, but it's going to depend on the type of project it is, you know? So, some of our clients, they want first level vetting. Some don't, they just want lists. Some clients want tech, some want higher volume things. I don't want to say, some do want to. We do some stuff on manufacturing where it is more higher volume. So it's case by case, but yeah.
Yeah, for sure. For sure. Well, look, I we're coming up on time. We've probably got about like 10 minutes left. I thought we could just kind of riff on just overall some of the different challenges, opportunities, just things that companies can be doing to be effective hiring nowadays and just kind of dive into that. So Are there anything top of mind, or do you feel like there's like any conversations you're having with customers where you're kind of like being a broken record right now about changes they need to be making or things they need to focus on in order to be successful hiring right now?
I mean, I could go back to my greatest hits here.
Right. I mean, this probably has been saying the same stuff for the last 10 years, right?
Yeah. It just, it kind of depends on what they're hiring for, I guess. I don't know. I think that's that,
a broad question.
Yeah. So it is a bit of a broad question, but I mean, the two big things are off the top for pretty much any position, especially tech, but also like any other corporate function is like, are you doing full remote and what's your pay? Like, those are the two things that any tech candidate right now, or really any candidate in these high corporate functions, like that determine if something's going to be like very doable versus near impossible. So, like it or not, like remote work is here to, I think that the big, okay, here's maybe a unique take. I'm sure you're familiar with it, but maybe people out there listening might not be, because I keep running into it. The amount of companies that will say something like, we're okay with remote, but we really want someone that can come in once a week. Like, if you can't come in once a week, like there's like, we're not asking that much, guys. Come on. Like, what's the big deal? Why can't they don't realize it's not about someone coming in once a week. It's that the talent pool in your local market. Like, we looked at this in Chicago, right? Where we're mostly based, like developers in Chicago is like 1 to 1.5% of the developer pool in the United States. So you're already cutting out 98% of the developers just by saying we want you in the office one day a week. And that's pretty much the same for any skill set. So like not being able to wrap your head around the fact that, like, yes, in an ideal world, we were all like, you'd have people, but do you want to get these positions filled or not? And can you make it work without that or not? Because your talent pool's like exponentially larger if you can figure out how to manage your organization in a way where you don't need people in the office.
All right. So my follow-up question to that is, how often, so when you present that data, right, to a prospect, mm-hmm. or a client existing, how often are you able to actually use the data to change their mind, like, versus how often are they just like, nope, this is the requirement?
It depends. We've definitely changed a lot of minds, but there's other places that I guess it's the age old challenge in talent acquisition HR. You know this, and hopefully I don't upset any HR people out there. Some HR people are great and they've got juice. Like, they can make changes in the organization. They have a voice. They can get in the leadership's ear. They can make them see the bigger picture. Mm-hmm. Some can't. And when you're talking to someone who can't, you know it right away. And it's when you're having those conversations, it's very much like, well, leadership will never go for that. Like it's their first reaction, you know, like, mm-hmm. I'm not talking to someone who can actually make a difference. Like, this isn't going to work, you know? But sometimes we are talking to leaders, or sometimes we're talking to people in charge of HR that, like, this is great data. Like, can you send me more on this? You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Can you put some figures together? You know, we've worked with some people in those positions where we've been able to get like back it up, and then they have been able to make changes that make things kind of more doable. So, it's going to be case by case on like just how good your contact is at their own job and how much of a true leader they are versus just having a leader title.
Yeah, I mean, that's why I personally invest a lot in developing relationships with CEOs. Mm-hmm. And I even at larger size companies, I still try to make those connections, because if you can get that executive buy-in, you're mm-hmm. going to be a lot more likely to impact results. And one of the things that, you know, you ideally make the change off the bat at the beginning of the engagement, but it's like that balancing act when you're selling too, right? Where mm-hmm. it's like, okay, you want the customer, but like, you know, you want to push back. You obviously need to say, if you don't feel like you can fill the roles, then, you know, you don't even want to sign them, because it's just going to, if you feel like it's the requirements are just too off. But it's that weird middle ground where it's like, we think we can fill them, it's going to be hard, but we still think it'd be a good client. How hard do we want to push up front before they know us on the importance of going remote, right? Those are the tricky ones. Yeah. And, you know, sometimes we'll get customers where it's like, look, we'll do it your way. This is, we've shared with you the data. These are the concerns. We're going to do it your way. And we'll check back in, you know, in a month, let's meet and see how it's going. And mm-hmm. the ones that are, it's like kind of, it's difficult. It's like they get to like a month into a search or like 2 months into a search. And then they're like, okay, now we have this data of how it's going. And then they're willing to make a change. So we always try to tell that story of like, look, we just don't want to be in a situation where, you know, you change your mind 2 months from now, but we've lost 2 months.
Yeah.
Right. It's like, we'd rather do that up front. Like, I'm just worried that I'm going to be coming back to you a few weeks from now and we're going to end up making the change anyway. So let's just get ahead of it, please.
ideally you're like a lot of, I mean, a lot of the time you're talking to people who already came, they're already struggling, you know, so they've already come we've had plenty where they're already halfway there because they realize something is broken. They just can't figure out why it wasn't working, you know, and then you can present some data to them and they finally come to that conclusion. But yeah, it's also, I don't know if we have enough time left to dump on just contingent recruiters, but that's also the mindset, you know, the whole idea of like, sure, we'll try it. And then you just peace out, you know, which when I say you, I mean, contingent recruiters, like don't try anything and then they'll just bail on it, you know? And so they're putting that in the ears of the contacts they were, they're not telling people no. So they're like, you know, organizations think, hey, this company is going to help me hire. And they're on it. They didn't tell me this was impossible. So why are you telling me this now? So it's also combating that a little bit.
Yeah, for sure. So I one of the things that I had to learn, like doing sales, particularly RPO sales, is I could go 15 minutes deep into a conversation complaining about a contingent business model and why that isn't the way to go. And so I had to I really had to dial back and maybe give like one differentiator, but really not go down this rabbit hole because I would just go too far. But on the flip side of the coin, though, I think that companies, it kind of annoys me when companies are just like, they get like really upset with contingent partners, right? Because it just doesn't make sense to me. So you're hiring a firm, you're not paying them anything up front. You're not giving them any exclusivity. There's no guarantee that they're going to make any money or that you're going to make them a priority or that you're, you know, this role is still going to be open in a month. But then you expect like a high level of buy-in and commitment and consistency from them. That's not a fair partnership. Like you have no skin in the game. Like, what do you expect?
If the shoe was on the other foot, they wouldn't do it. You know, if this advertising firm that's hiring, like they wouldn't work contingent for their clients for free. They wouldn't give free software. They wouldn't build a house. They wouldn't do any of these things on a contingent basis. But it's just like recruiters, the recruiting industry painted itself in this stupid corner where we're like, we're the only service where like a lot of idiots are willing to do it and everyone's used to it and thinks that it sounds normal. Hey, someone else will do it. And then when it doesn't work, they get upset about it. But like no one else in their right mind would go to market with that model.
It's like, again, and I don't feel like this is that complicated, but I guess like it just, maybe it isn't that intuitive or obvious, but it's just like, look, it's a business model that's purely contingent, meaning that they have to have low base salaries, meaning that they're probably going to have junior recruiters, not all the cases, sometimes they're senior people, but you know, meaning that they're not going to be investing in like sophisticated approaches to delivery. And also meaning that they're going to take the path of least resistance because they have to, because their expenses are recurring, but their revenue is not. And
it's
so
all
that,
related. Right. It all relates back to how these companies are run and the type of people they hire and how low they pay them. And, you know, it's all one thing.
Yeah. It's like, I just want to say to companies, like, what did you expect? Like, did you honestly think you were going to get a high quality solution? I don't know. It's just interesting. I guess. And again, it's why we'll get on the phone with prospects and they'll be like, oh, I had a frustrating experience with a recruiter. It's like, okay, right. Maybe it was a recruiter, maybe not, or maybe it's just a broken business model, right? Like, you know, if you put a good recruiter up against a bad business model is going to win most of the times, right? Like that's kind of like, I remember like Warren Buffett said that about executive leaders. You say you put a great leader up against a bad business model, business model is always going to dominate. And I think it's just that's very applicable to our industry, right? Like you need business models that both teams have skin in the game, that enable high quality solutions that are scalable, sustainable, all of those things, right?
Yeah. Well, it's like, you're not from Chicago, but like Al Cheval, one of the nicer like hamburger places around, like really, really high. Everyone comes here, like waits in line for hours. It's like saying, I don't want to go to Al Cheval because I went to McDonald's once and it sucked. You know, like I've already had a hamburger. It's the same thing, you know?
Right.
Anyways.
That's a good one. I'm going to start using that. Well, hey, James, man, this has been a ton of fun. I appreciate you coming on and sharing your insights and what you're seeing out there. And obviously we have a lot of shared experiences, so it's just been really fun riffing with you. And I just want to say thanks for joining us today.
Yeah. Thanks for having me.
For sure. And for everybody tuning in, thank you for joining us and we'll see you next time. Take care.
Thank you for tuning in to the Breakthrough Hiring Show. We hope you've enjoyed today's episode and gained a lot of valuable insights to help guide your talent strategy. I also want to say thank you to my team at Secure Vision for making the show possible. Secure Vision is the number one embedded recruitment provider, and we are a three-time category leader on G2. Secure Vision partners with over 150 companies to provide on-demand recruiters who specialize in either tech, revenue, or G&A. For more information, you can visit securevision.io. For more content, you can follow me on LinkedIn at James Mackey or on Twitter at James Mackey DMV. We've dropped links in the description. If you want to be on our show or have any topics you'd like for us to cover, reach out at breakthroughhiring.io. We really appreciate your support with reviews on Apple Podcasts. And lastly, make sure to tune in every Tuesday and Thursday for a new episode. See you next time.